Welcome to the Family Story Podcast, where we talk about family relationships, important family events, and most of all, family stories that can be passed on for generations to come. I'm your host, Rick Jensen, and I'm glad you've joined us today. So sit back, listen, learn, and love as we talk about your family in this episode of the Family Story Podcast. Welcome to the Family Story Podcast. Today in our studio, we have Caleb Ince, who recently returned from the Botswana mission. He's going to tell us a little bit more about that, but he's meeting with us via video conference today because he's in quarantine from the coronavirus, which we'll talk a little bit about later. So welcome, Caleb. We are so excited to have you here with us today.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
First of all, I want to go ahead and start right from the beginning. You were called to Botswana, and that's in South Africa. Tell us about your feelings when you got that call.
Well, yeah, it was pretty interesting. I actually did something that not a lot of people do, and I opened my mission call on my own before I opened it in front of everybody. And I'm kind of glad that I did because it gave me a chance to really think about where I was going to be and what was really going on. So I went up to Snow Canyon and just sat at the top of some of the rocks there, and I read my scriptures for a few minutes, and then I went ahead and opened my call. But it was cool because as I was reading my scriptures before I actually opened my call, I read a verse. I think it's in Alma chapter 34. I can't remember the exact reference right now. I think it's 37. But anyway, it basically talked about how you can humble yourself before God and worship him in whatever place you might be in. And so when I went and opened my call, it gave me a lot of comfort because I had just read that verse and I knew that wherever I was going, it was going to be okay. And I felt really calm about it and had a good feeling come over me. So I was excited. And you can see in the video of me opening my mission call, I think when I read that I was going to Africa, my mom was a little bit less excited than I was. She was a little bit surprised at first, but yeah, I felt really good about it and I was excited to serve there. So,
oh, that's exciting. And so now that's all in the past, that's all over with. And you talk about you can worship wherever. So let's go into a little bit more detail about that particular segment. You arrive in Botswana. Did you have any type of culture shock? And how did you feel like your worship changed after you arrived there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's a good question. Well, when I first landed, the mission is kind of unique because it's the Botswana Namibia mission, and it actually covers a good part of South Africa as well, kind of the northern part of South Africa. So when we flew into the mission, we flew into Johannesburg, South Africa. And the first thing that I remember is that I looked in this van that they were going to take us to the MTC in, and the steering wheel was on the wrong side of the car. And I thought that was really funny and really, really strange. But it was kind of nice because I went to the Johannesburg MTC, so that kind of helped prepare me. They fed us a little bit of the cultural food, and we were able to learn a little bit about the culture and the language because we were there with some African missionaries as well. So I think that helped a lot. But there were a lot of things that were different, like just the housing situations and the economic situation. Just people don't have a whole lot there. A lot of people live in shacks or in just really small homes. And so I think that was a big thing as well. Is just, and then coming back here, of course, and everyone has big houses with carpet and mm-hmm. everyone has their own room to sleep in. So there were definitely some culture shock things there.
It's such a different culture than from where you came from in the United States. Was it difficult for you to feel comfortable there?
Well, I think it was because it was a different place. Feeling comfortable didn't come all at once for sure. But I think one thing that helped me is just that right from the start, I think because I had learned a little bit of the culture in the MTC, I was able to just see how humble these people were, how much they wanted to hear about God. And I think that helped me a lot because no matter where I was going, I knew that the people were humble and that they did want to hear from me. And I know that's something that in a lot of missions in the world, you don't really get a lot of, because there's a lot of rejection and people don't really want to hear from missionaries and things like that. But that helped me adjust, I think, because even though the culture and the circumstances were different, at least the people were humble and they were willing to listen and they were welcoming. And so because of that, I didn't really feel too distant, I guess.
That's great. Tell me about your experience in the MTC. I know most missionaries go to the MTC in Provo, but you went to Johannesburg.
Well, yeah, it's definitely, I'm sure, a lot different from the Provo MTC. I think it's actually the smallest MTC in the world. And there were about 24 missionaries in my group. And so it was kind of cool because there were so few of us. We all got to know each other pretty well. We had camaraderie, I guess, in those 3 weeks that we were there. But I kind of mentioned this before, but I think one of my favorite parts was, because it was a local MTC, I was able to learn about some of the culture even before I actually got into the mission field. There was one missionary that was actually in my district in the same room as me, and he was South African. And his culture was Xhosa, which is like one of the clicking languages. And so it was kind of cool because he like taught us all the different clicks while we were there, and we got to practice and learn a little bit of the language. So yeah, I think that was my favorite part, really. It made the transition easier, I think.
So do you speak click?
Not that much, no. I don't really speak that much of any of the languages in my mission, because the mission language was English, and there's just a lot of different languages in each of those countries. Like South Africa, I think, has 11 official languages. Mm-hmm. And then in Botswana, there's mainly just a couple, but in Namibia, there were like 3 or 4 tribal languages as well. So we pretty much learned how to greet in all of the languages and learned a few phrases in some of them, but overall, I don't speak any of them that well. So,
well, let's hear some of those phrases. What do you know?
Well, my favorite language that I learned about was in Namibia, and it's called Damara Nama. And that language, it's less known, but it actually has more clicks in it than Xhosa.
For our listeners, you can't see Caleb say that, but he's doing a clicking sound with his tongue when he says that word. Caleb, how would you say to somebody, if I came up to you and said, "Hello, how are you?" What would you say back in that language? Could you tell me?
Yeah. Well, how you respond, basically how you say that you're fine is like "Aikea," and you can ask like how someone's day is by saying "Ainseere." So that's just like one of the examples of the clicks, but there's a few different ones, and they're in that language, they're represented by symbols. So like an exclamation point is like that. And a hashtag is, and then there's like some different slashes. One of them is, and then the other one is. So it's kind of cool just because there's like these different clicks that are part of their language and they use them all the time in that one. So
wow, that's really amazing.
Like about that one.
That's amazing. Yeah. That's really cool. So yeah. You got out into the mission field. I've heard, and I don't know if this is true or not, that there's racism in that area. Did you experience that?
Yeah, I didn't experience it too much in my areas that I served in. The place that it's the worst is in South Africa, where, you know, as most people know, there was apartheid until pretty recently. And so I know that there were some wards in my mission that struggled with it a lot. And none of the areas where I served really had that many white people. Mostly they were just blacks, Africans. But one of the wards, it's in northern Pretoria, and there are a lot of Afrikaners and then just also black people. But they, in the chapel, it's kind of like the white people sit on one side and the black people sit on one side. And that's even just within the church. Mm. And even sometimes when we went into those black areas, they called them townships in South Africa. If people thought that we were Afrikaners, there were some people that didn't want to talk to us. But once they knew that we were Americans, then they were okay with talking to us and getting to know what we were about. So there were definitely a few interesting things, but in my areas, I never experienced it firsthand, really.
Did you ever have a Black companion or a South Africa companion?
Yeah, I had one Botswana companion. So he was from Botswana. His name was Elder Moromong. And yeah, he was my only African companion, which is kind of rare actually to have so few. Most people have more African companions than that, but he was more Americanized, I guess, than most of them. It was because he had spent time around missionaries before his mission, or it might have also been because he was on social media a lot, and that kind of creates a world culture. But yeah, it was interesting to serve with him. He was a really good missionary, though.
Oh, that's great. Now, you were in a position of leadership.
Yeah.
Tell me about how does that work on a mission? Explain that to me. Are you still teaching the gospel? Or are you just working with the missionaries? What would you say your main responsibility is as a leader?
Yeah. Well, I think it definitely varies from mission to mission. And in my mission, I think it was kind of a blessing because it's a pretty small mission as far as the number of people, the number of missionaries that are there. I mean, it's very large geographically, but at any given time, we only had between like 70 and 80 missionaries, which is pretty small. So because of that, even when I was in positions of leadership, I still was able to do a lot of missionary work because there wasn't really too much stuff that had to be handled with the missionaries. So I was a district leader in my first area. And then in my second area, I was a zone leader. And I really liked both of those because I could go on exchanges with the missionaries and get to know them. And I think that was really my favorite part is it can be hard to relate to people when, I mean, you just see them and interact with them sometimes, but I feel like going on exchanges with the missionaries really helped me to get to know where they were coming from, see how they worked, appreciate their strengths and things like that. So yeah, I think it was a blessing because the leadership was pretty, I guess, low key because there weren't as many missionaries and the districts and the zones were small. So
thank you. Out of the mission field, there's times where you have your highest highs and your lowest lows. I would love to hear about your experience with each of those.
Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah, I think my lowest lows as far as being discouraged or just thinking that mission was really hard, it happened pretty early on my mission. When I came into my first area, the area that I was trained in, I was really excited. I was really excited to be a missionary. And I had been told that, not everything will be what you expect. You have these expectations for what it's going to be like to be on mission and to be a missionary. But yeah, I guess I had heard that, but I was like, well, I think I have a pretty good idea. But when I first got into the field, I realized that, not everybody was going to be as obedient as I thought they should, not everybody was going to be working as hard as they probably should. And that was kind of a tough realization for me, especially because I was really excited about doing the work and going out and teaching. And I think it was the first night that I had come from the MTC, and I came like in the afternoon and got to my area that evening. And I asked, I was like, okay, so how many people do we have to teach? And my trainer was like, zero. It's like, what? Okay. So it was the area that I came into was pretty much completely, there just wasn't anything going on there. So I was like, seriously? But we were able to get to work, and it was kind of nice because my companion and I were pretty much on equal grounds because he knew the area a little bit and he knew a few of the members. But other than that, we were just starting from scratch. So we were calling a lot of people. I think in the first couple of days, we like called up like 100 people from the area book and all that stuff. But those first couple transfers were just really hard because my trainer wasn't quite as excited about the work, and I just, there were a couple days that I just really, I mean, I remember one day in particular that we had just like finished a planning session or something, and I wanted to get out and work, and my companion wanted to take a nap, and so I was like, okay. So he went and took a nap, and I just remember kneeling down and just like crying and praying and just remembering that I just wished I could talk to my parents and wished I could get advice from them, but I couldn't. And so I just had to pour out my heart to God and ask him to help me and tell him that I wanted to do my best and all those things. So yeah, there were a couple really hard times then, but we were able to keep trying to do the work. And I think that's what helped me the most, is just trying to focus on the work, and it just helped get my mind off the other things, I guess. So.
Wow, thank you. Now tell me about your highest high.
Highest high. My highest high, I would say, was when I got to go and serve in Namibia. So that was when I was, let me think, I had been on mission for about 9 months. And I found out I was getting transferred to Namibia. And Namibia is kind of the place in the mission that it's like the coveted place, because there's only 4 branches there. And so there's only like, under normal circumstances, there would only be like 8 or 10 missionaries in the country at one time. And so to be able to get to go there was a privilege, but I found out I was going there. And for the first couple transfers, what we had heard about Namibia, it was like me and there were 2 other missionaries that went there at the same time. And all that we had really heard was that the work was really hard, but the members were really good. And so we kind of came into it just being ready to work as hard as we could and I guess bracing ourselves for the work being really hard, because that's all we heard. But the first couple of transfers, things were pretty slow. And then I got a new companion that I really liked, and he kind of helped me shift my vision to working more with the members. And rather than going out and like tracting all the time, when we had stuff fall through, we would go and try and stop by less actives or try and stop by members and help build a relationship with them and just help them know that we were there to help them. And when we started focusing on that and doing that, there were a lot of people that the members started giving us to teach, and a lot of people came out of the woodworks. And that was really my most successful area, because we were able to baptize people, and they were strong people and converted, and they had the help of the members. So I'd say that was my highest high. That area was called Katatura. I love that. So
thank you. If you were to think about that period of time that you were out on your mission and you could relive one day, what day would that be? Tell me about that day.
Yeah, there's one day that's coming to mind, and it's kind of funny because this day, I mean, there was some successes that we had, but it's also kind of a crazy day. But it was the day that 2 of the people that I had been teaching in that area in Katatura, the day that they got baptized. And it was a mother named Adelaide and her son, whose name was Kenneth. And they were just an amazing family. They were from Angola. And so the mother only spoke Portuguese, and we had to teach her through a translator. But she was just amazing. And they were very converted and everything. But that day of their baptism, there were a few other baptisms in the district as well. And their baptism went really well. And there was another girl who was about 10 years old who was also getting baptized that day, but she was terrified of water. And so it took like an hour for her to be to be baptized, because she would come down the steps and stand in the water, but she'd be holding onto the wall, or she'd be holding onto the person that was supposed to baptize her. And in that way, that day was really difficult. And there was another baptism earlier that day that didn't go that well either. But I remember when that girl did get baptized, the 10-year-old, just it kind of hit me and taught me a lesson that, you know, if she could go and face that fear of getting baptized, and she was obviously terrified, but she wanted to be baptized, that really any of us can do anything that God asks us to do. It's kind of like that verse in 1 Nephi 3:7 that if God gives us a commandment, then he'll prepare a way for us to fulfill that commandment. So yeah, it was kind of a crazy day, but that's one of the most memorable days of my mission, I would say. So.
Oh, that's great. Thanks for sharing that with us. What impact do you think your mission has had on you and that will have on you for the rest of your life?
There's a lot. obviously, I think one of the big ones, and I hope that every missionary comes away with this, but just one of the big things is definitely an appreciation for the scriptures, and especially for the Book of Mormon. Because obviously, as you're a missionary, you're studying those things every day. And inviting other people to read the Book of Mormon, to pray about it, and to come to know that it's true. And there was an invitation that our mission president gave us pretty soon after he came. It was about halfway through my mission, I got a new mission president. But he invited us to read the Book of Mormon for 15 minutes every day. And being able to do that and just immerse myself in the Book of Mormon and gain an appreciation for it and truly study it is one of the big things that impacted me from my mission. And so that's probably the biggest thing. Obviously, there's a lot of others I could mention as well, but
that's awesome. There may be a lot of people who listen to this podcast, particularly family members and friends, and maybe even people that you don't know. What kind of message would you want to send to those people?
Yeah, well, I think it would be really connected to even just the last comment I made about the Book of Mormon and the power that I realized is in that book. And a lot of what helped me is, as we've also been studying Come Follow Me this year, and there's kind of like those prophetic promises in the front of the book. And one of those is from President Nelson. And I just think it's amazing the promises that he gives us for reading the Book of Mormon daily. Talks about how if we do that, we'll be able to be immunized against the evils of the day and be able to overcome addictions that we might have and those kind of things. And I just am really impressed by the power of the Book of Mormon. And I think one of the most important things that we invited people to do as a missionary, and that even I feel like I could invite people to do even now, is just to make the Book of Mormon a part of their lives and to appreciate what that really means. Because even as President Nelson has invited us to think about what our lives would be like if that knowledge about the Book of Mormon was taken away, as I've thought about that, I just think about how my life would be completely different. I don't know if I would make the choices that I make, because so much of the choices that I have made in my life and that I keep making depend on that, you know, we are accountable for the things that we do, and it does make a difference according to the choices that we make, if we're going to have joy or if we're going to have misery, and really what's going to happen when we have to stand before God. And so I think that's the biggest message that I would share, is just the importance of the Book of Mormon and that your life really can change by reading it every day. So
thank you. Because of the worldwide pandemic of coronavirus, you were sent home earlier than you had anticipated on coming home. Tell us how that all unfolded for you. How did you feel when you learned that you would be coming home early? What exactly happened?
Well, ever since we saw the announcement that church had been basically canceled worldwide, my companion and I had been kind of wondering about what was going to happen next. And yeah, we kind of figured that the church would have to say something about missionary work, but there was really a lot of anxiety between that point and when we actually found out what was going to happen, just with kind of all the uncertainty, not knowing if we were going to stay or if we were going to go or if we were going to have to be in our flats. So that part was pretty stressful, just the anxiety of not knowing. And so we definitely had that possibility in mind, especially when we heard that the Philippines had been evacuated and all that. But basically, that was like, what, two or a week and a half before I found out I was going. And so that time was kind of an anxious time, but it was on a Saturday. Like I said, about a week and a half after that announcement that church was canceled. And my companion and I were the assistants. And so that morning first of all, we had read the announcement that said that basically many more missionaries would be returning home. But we had already found out that we were going to be one of the few missions in Africa that was staying. So I wasn't really that worried about it. I figured it didn't affect us. But that morning we were helping with a missionary that had actually just come back to the mission from Madagascar and helping get him settled and stuff. So we were kind of in the mission office, and we had just come back to the mission office, and we saw that the two office elders were kind of like huddled around the door of the mission president's office, and that the door was shut. We're like, okay, what's going on here? But one of those missionaries was like, yeah, we're all leaving. I think he had overheard the phone call or something. But then the mission president came out and had everyone else clear out of the office, and he sat down with us, and he was like, well, the dreaded phone call came, and we have to let everyone know to pack up, all of the North American missionaries. And so from that point, pretty much until I got onto the plane, everything was just crazy, because my companion and I had to call and let the zone leaders know that they had to have everyone pack, and us and the mission president and his wife were just coming up with a big list of all the things that we needed to have settled before everybody left. And so we had to figure out, you know, who was going to have the keys to all the flats that were being closed, where all the area books were going to go, what we were going to do with the phones. And
excuse me, how many North American missionaries were actually leaving?
50. Hmm. Yeah. And we had like 78 missionaries at the time. And then there were 10 more foreign missionaries that I don't even know if, I don't think they've left yet, because South Africa went into the lockdown, and then there were 8 local missionaries. And so basically the mission president was left with 18, and eventually that'll go down to 8.
Wow.
And so, yeah, it's pretty sad,
wow,
pretty devastating for the mission. But yeah, so it was really hectic, because we were helping to coordinate all those things. But, you know, we were able to get everything organized to a point where we had everything in a document, so that the mission president could access all that information if he needed it. And by the time we left, I felt good about leaving, because he had what he needed, basically. But I still kind of feel for them, because they have less than 20 missionaries now. And they have to, their whole office support left and everything. So it's a tough situation, but.
Oh my goodness. So now that you've been home, you've been in quarantine, and you've probably had lots of time to think about your mission and if it was acceptable to God. Have you received an answer on that?
That's a really good question. And maybe just to go back and with this kind of talk about some of the feelings of having to come home so suddenly and so early, I didn't really have much time to think about that and all the craziness of helping get all the missionaries out. And so it really wasn't until, I was on the plane that I had time to kind of be like, wow, like I'm actually going home and all that. And as I've thought about it, there have been a lot of obviously sad feelings of having to leave Africa and having to stop being a missionary. Like when I got released and I had to take my tag off, I cried like a baby. And all my family can bear witness to that, because it was probably awkward for them. But as I've thought about it, you know, those feelings that I had of sadness of having to leave and all those things, I think those were feelings that I would have had anyway, you know, even if I had to come home 4 months later. And Obviously, my mission wasn't perfect, and I made mistakes, and there were things that if I could go back to previous areas that I would do differently. But throughout the whole time, I was doing my best, and I was trying to make my family proud. And one of the big lessons that I learned from my mission was that ultimately it was about making God proud. And it took me some time to learn that. At first, I was mostly focused on, you know, making my mission president happy and making sure my family was proud of me. But as my mission went on, I focused a lot more on how God felt about my service. And so it was something I had thought about during my whole mission. And now looking back, I realized that although it was sad that I had to come home, and it was different to come home in the way that I did, I really don't feel that shortchanged, because I feel that in the 20 months that I did serve, that I gave my all. And I feel like if I was coming home at a time that maybe I was slacking, or if maybe I don't know, sometimes it seems to go that maybe a missionary will not work as hard until maybe his last 6 months, when he realized like, oh, I need to actually make this worth it. But because I feel like I was giving an honest effort, I don't feel like I had to deal with that regret. So.
What a great answer. I believe you. You know, as you were sitting there talking, I thought, yep, he gave his all. That's great.
Thanks.
Thank you for sharing that. Missionaries often have the opportunity to share their testimony. Would you be willing to share your testimony with our listeners today?
Yeah, for sure. Well, I guess first I can just say that I'm so grateful for the opportunity that I did have to serve a mission. It's obviously it was hard, and we often talk about a mission as a sacrifice, and it definitely, you know, there are things that you have to sacrifice to go and to be a missionary to serve. But I feel like with that, even with it being a sacrifice, I gained so much more than I gave, really. It's kind of like that scripture in Mosiah that talks about how when we obey God's commandments, then he already blesses us, and then he's paid us, and we're still indebted to him. And I think that's how I feel about my mission, because of all the blessings that I've received. But I just also want to share my testimony that because of those experiences that I've had, because of the answers to prayer and the answers to prayer that I've seen in my life and in the lives of those I've served, that I do know that God is there. He hears our prayers and he answers, and he's aware of us and our challenges that we go through. And I know that he sent his son, Jesus Christ, to suffer and to die for us, because I felt that atoning power in my life, and I felt the Spirit testifying that is real. And I know that the Book of Mormon is true, that it's another testament of Jesus Christ, and that we can come nearer to God by reading it and by learning about the plan of salvation in it. And I know that, you know, we have all these blessings because the gospel was truly restored. And you can share that in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen. Thank you, Caleb. That's a beautiful testimony. As we close out, is there anything else that you feel like you would like to tell those people who would be listening?
I guess I could just say to, you know, anyone who's considering going on a mission, I know right now it's an uncertain time to go on a mission and to serve, but for anyone who might be listening in the future who's considering that, and who might be thinking about whether it's a good thing or something for them to do, I would just say if you have that opportunity and if you are able to serve, then you know, don't think about it for another minute, I guess, because it's definitely been the best thing for my life, the best thing to help me grow spiritually and to develop just even as a person. So I guess I would just invite those who are considering it and who are able to go to really prayerfully consider it and make that decision, and make the decision to grow and to change and become more converted by serving a mission.
Thank you, Caleb. Great insight. Well, we want to thank you for joining us today on the Family Story Podcast. What a great interview. Enjoyable to talk to you.
Hey, thank you.
And we also want to thank our listeners for joining us. We hope you join us again on the Family Story Podcast. Thank you for joining us today on the Family Story Podcast. We hope you enjoyed this episode. The Family Story Podcast is a production of Harmony Audio Recordings. This podcast is strictly prohibited for use without permission. For more information about Family Story Podcast or to create your own Family Story Podcast, contact us at familystorypodcast.com. We hope you join us again soon and encourage you to go create a family memory today.